This is the KPDZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. May is National Bicycle Month, in recognition of which fact we are bringing you a reprise of a program on bicycle safety originally aired Friday, April 13th as part of Phil Anderson's Toss Salad program. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
This is really coming in response to the death of Mark Hinthorn. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about Mark last week on Toss Salad, and actually Mark Michaud was here to do that. But anyway, Samantha Thomas has a broad community design background focusing on educating, empowering, and equipping, tough to say, I guess, communities in transportation and land use policy and practice transformations to achieve greater well-being, more equitable, and human-centered places. Over the past 6 years, she has worked with over 200 cities and towns across America, leading multidimensional and multidisciplinary teams in creating action-oriented blueprints for more walkable, bikeable, and livable streets, a shared future. Also, Mark Michaud. Mark, welcome. Well, welcome, Samantha.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's great to be here.
I forgot to do that. And Mark, welcome back. You come to us from Colorado. Your relationship with bicycling is what?
Basically, when I first got married, my wife basically told me to get off the couch. So it was bicycling. I was a competitive distance runner for many years, and my knees gave out on me, and so I moved to bicycling.
Uh-huh. So, and that was how long ago?
When I went to bicycling? Probably 20-something years ago.
Bunch of years ago. And Nat Nichols, whose voice has been on Toss Salad maybe half a dozen times, sometimes as a guest DJ.
Yeah, no, I didn't bring any records with me today, but sometimes Phil is nice enough to let me come in and play my 45s.
And Nat also is a cycle racer and formerly worked at the Recyclery, where I wish she were still. And before that was a cycle courier in London and New York City, a brave thing to do. And if anybody were to know about how to stay alive on a bicycle in a crowded and difficult environment, it will be Nat Nichols. What I have in mind is, I don't know what Mark is going to want to talk about, to tell you the truth. He invited himself, kind of, last week, and though happy to have him, he will surprise me, and I'm sure it'll be a pleasant surprise. With Nat, I want to talk about maybe behavioral issues about bicycle safety, and if you wish to talk about structural matters, infrastructure, that's fine too.
I am happy to talk a little bit about that, but I want to be very clear that I don't want to get into any victim blaming at all. There are things you can do to be safer on a bicycle. I completely believe that Mark was doing all of them, and that most of the behaviors I would like to address are not cycle related, but vehicular related, and the kind of behaviors as a driver we can do to make sure that the world is safer for people who are more likely to die.
And I would imagine we all are drivers. Nat, I have seen, and I believe a Toyota.
Yes, the Adventure Honda Civic, yes.
This is a Honda Civic it is. Mark drives something because he came from a telephone number that is a little distant from here, I think. And how about Samantha?
Yes, I share a car, car light. But I think at some point of our days, weeks, months, lifetimes, we're all drivers.
And I am too. We own a Subaru station wagon, and our second vehicle, the one I drive sparingly, but when I do, is a rather hulking Toyota pickup truck. And if you live in the country, sometimes the pickup truck comes in handy. So yes, we're all drivers. We all can look at this matter from two perspectives. Samantha, talking to you first. Yes. Now, what actually is your background? What actually is the work you do in 200 cities?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have urban design schooling. And 6 years ago when I moved here, I got connected with Dan Burden, who is one of the fathers of walkability in our country, pioneering safer streets for people, recognizing that our streets are public spaces, and we all are entitled to be able to have the freedom to safely move around in any mode choice that we take. But obviously, like the song illustrated, our priority in making cities hasn't always been people walking, biking, using other human-powered modes. It's turned towards the car. And so how do we start to reshift our transportation hierarchy? So I help cities think about what's the strategy to transform our system thinking about the built environment so it becomes a healthier, more sustainable, more resilient, fun, joyful, inclusive place for us.
And we think about we turned towards the car. I hadn't thought about this, but we turned to the car from what?
From walking and biking and...
And riding a horse.
Horsepower.
Riding a horse. Exactly, horsepower.
Yeah.
And the car took over a long time ago.
Yeah.
So maybe what we're trying to do is take our cities and our countryside. I'm a countryside guy. I live out by Chimico. Mm-hmm. Take our countryside back.
Totally.
How do we do it?
Well, there's not one silver bullet answer. There's many approaches that we need to take, from working to get the right policy measures to more equally balance the mode share spending and priority for streets, to think about the scale of density and proximity to places, and that comes in all forms, from a crossroads in Chimicum to Port Townsend being built on walking, you know, the old town and historic downtown. And then also in thinking about from the safety lens, really starting to understand that our transportation and traffic safety specifically is not about the individual assuming the responsibility. While that's a key component, but we have to change to what's the responsibility of the system. So that would be our transportation planners and engineers, our policymakers, our law enforcement, and starting to shift the conversation on how do we create a safer environment for everyone. And I think, like Nat, you were saying, my hope and emphasis is that to get anywhere as a community, this is not a person biking versus a person driving. That is not the way it should be. We all share the same space. And so how do we get there together so that we can prevent serious injuries and fatalities from happening on our roads?
So you, six years you're here.
Yeah.
You could assess, I think we're talking about bicycle safety, not pedestrian safety. You could,
yeah, in this case, yeah.
You could divert the conversation if you think there's a reason to, mm-hmm. but otherwise we'll talk about bicycles. Mm-hmm. I would like an assessment of Port Townsend as a safe biking community, if it is, and after the assessment, what can, I can say we, even though I live out in the countryside, what can we all do? And perhaps you venture out into the countryside and you could suggest as well. I rode in today. The Surly you saw on the rack out there, or on the ramp rather, is mm-hmm. how I got here.
Oh, great.
And I feel actually fairly safe mm-hmm. riding into town, although I have to ride on Rody Drive. And mm-hmm. Once in town, I start to get a little bit nervous sometimes. What do you think about this town for bicycling and the countryside?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I would say that there have been incremental steps to work on making it a better bicycling town, a better bicycling county. My belief is that we can be better, we can do more. And so how do we unify our vision for that so that our policymakers can make stronger investments towards that priority? And so, you know, I think there's some incremental changes that are really available to us, a lot that can happen with paint around using green paint, for example, to mark conflict spots. So that would be anywhere where there's a street intersection, a prominent driveway intersection. Let's mark it with green paint to reinforce to both the bicyclists and the motorists that this is a conflict point. We need to be looking for one another and take some of that shared responsibility. Of course, there's, you know, higher cost items as we continue to move on around trails and fully protected systems to get more people of all ages out riding and bring back that human experience of learning how to ride a bike. But, you know, people want more separated facilities to really feel safe. But that would be a longer term change. So there's ways to start to incrementally increase that.
Is this conversation currently underway with city council, city planners, county commission, county planners?
Yeah, I would say the conversation is definitely on its way. The city has a non-motorized advisory committee that plays a role in the conversation. Local 2020 has a transportation lab. Of course, there's great bicycle partners and shops and things like that, like in the recyclery. My personal assessment and opinion is we could be doing better in working together. I think that we need to sharpen our shared voice as citizens and as advocates so that we create more ground support and ground cover for decision makers to better put a foot forward and make a stronger stance in the policy arena and then funding arena for it.
I have come to look at bicycle lanes. Mark Henthorn was in a bicycle lane. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about bicycle lanes a lot. In fact, a friend of mine and maybe of some of yours, Dave Tilk, once wrote a letter to the editor in the Leader pretty much decrying the whole notion of bicycle lanes. And I frankly thought he was a bit nuts when he made that statement. But now I at least know why, and that is that bicycle lanes are like crosswalks, and that is they create a false sense of security, that if you're aware of the fact that the sense of security is false, then maybe I think they are useful. I feel safer in them than in the traffic lanes, but still, I once just about got sent to heaven or hell or wherever I would have gone in a crosswalk. Mm-hmm. There I was. Those white lines meant, of course, nothing at all.
Yeah, so a big component to think about is speed. Mm-hmm. The higher motorist speeds can be, the higher risk of a crash, and then the higher risk of a fatality if and when a crash occurs. And so if we're looking at 19th, for example, I think it's posted at 30 miles per hour?
25.
Okay, 25, but people easily drive 30, especially if you're going downhill. Mm-hmm. So from a built environment standpoint, then we have to start to ask ourselves, well, if our policy, our law is 25 miles per hour, then how do we put the other design features in the road that make people behave in the way that produces the outcome of driving 25 miles per hour? And then the crash that happened there was a right hook incident, which means that a person driving is taking a right-hand turn. And in this case, from the information I've heard, it is apparent to me that likely the motorist failed to look through the blind spot and up into the bicycle lane like any motorist should do, and was responsible for hitting Mark or the bicyclist. And the sad part is, unfortunately, even our local media, the paper, did a victim-blaming thing, saying it was the bicyclist's fault, even though a person in the bike lane who's going straight has the right-of-way to go straight. And so one of the opportunities that I think this really illustrates is, how do we change the conversation? How do we look at our current law enforcement laws? The state of Massachusetts, for example, has law reinforcing the fact that a person in a bike lane has the right of way even to a vehicle turning right. And therefore, if that a crash like that happens, then the person driving is held responsible for failing to see that it was safe to turn right. And I, from my searching before the show, I didn't see that law here in Washington State. So there's new partnerships that can happen with law enforcement. There's new design techniques that we can be thinking about to create safer roads by design. And then, of course, there's an educational and community awareness piece on how do we understand to respect one another? How do we think about some of the behavior choices we can be making, both as bicyclists and motorists? And what does that mean to become more aware of one another as we work to make the shift to safer cycling?
I witnessed a right hook accident. I should say a right hook accident that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the name, but we know what that means. Riding in front of me was my wife, and I, in fact, prefer to have her in front. I find myself irritated at scenes I so often see where the man always rides in front. I always ride behind. Well, sometimes it's startling, and a car zoomed past her, had to have seen both of us, needed to turn desperately immediately onto Prospect Street, which is on the way into town by Cala Point, right? Luckily, it's a level roadway, and we weren't going very fast. Mm-hmm. But it was there could not have been any mystery about our being there.
Yeah.
None at all.
And I picked up on something that you said, Phil. I think another important part of the conversation is to stop saying car and to say a person driving a car. We need to humanize this mm-hmm. until the autonomous vehicle is relevant in our society and on every street and in every town. As a motorist, I mean, you have to take the responsibility that you're in a 2,000-pound machine that you're in control of. And so there's a lot of factors that go into it. But my belief is the design of our physical space creates our behavior. You can't have a crime happen without the criminal, a victim, and the environment. You know, it's that triangular approach. And so then when we look at street safety, we have a similar thing happening where there's, you know, the motorist in this case, the victim being the more vulnerable user, a person biking, and then the environment. It occurred somewhere. So what can we start to learn from that actual environment, too, to say and ask ourselves, are we setting everyone up for success, or are there instances where we're maybe not doing the best that we can be doing? And I think that's where we have room to improve in our city and county.
You're a very diplomatic person, Samantha Thomas, and thank you for that.
I try.
Nat Nichols. You have educated, you have taught, especially young people, about cycling, I believe.
Yeah, I'm now middle school and high school mountain bike coach for here in Port Townsend for the Ratfish. So there's a lot of that with those guys.
You talk about street riding as well.
We do, because we do street riding to get back and forth to trails, and it's important to me that we're doing a good job of that. And obviously, running in traffic is probably the thing that I have the most experience doing, possibly besides breathing, in my life.
And how did you manage to survive New York City and London? What lessons did you apply to your daily rides around? I mean, you have to be quick. You had to maybe even take risks to do your job, or did you?
Oh, of course. Okay. Yeah, no, definitely.
How did you survive then?
I think that the thing that I ended up having to do is that I am a very by the rules person in some ways. Like, I believe that things that, like, if there's a set of rules, I'm believing that everybody's playing by them. So when I started being a bike messenger, I don't know, I was probably hit 3 or 4 times in my first couple weeks. And I had to realize that cars were not going to play by traffic rules. They were going to do what they were going to do, and I had to learn how to know when they were going to do the wrong thing. I don't think that that's a skill that anybody should have to learn.
But we all should anyway.
I think that, you know, for the purposes of this conversation, sure, but also no. Like, this is something that that cars should be doing the things that they are supposed to do. They are supposed to be predictable in traffic. And as cyclists, we can also be predictable in traffic, and then all of us can work together better. But to be able to follow the laws, to be able to understand what it is that you're in charge of, and to understand there are consequences for not doing that.
Predictable.
Yes.
That's the word. And Samantha's going to say something in just a second, but I'm going to say before that I invited Sergeant Troy Serber to this conversation. He is, I think, the City of Port Townsend Police Department's expert on bicycling and bicycle safety. And he did have a time conflict that he was trying to work out. It's also possible that somebody above him refused to let him participate. I intend to look into this because he really should be here, mm-hmm. because he really does have to, he wanted to be here. Mm-hmm. He came to the studio. We had a wonderful conversation. Mm-hmm. Something happened, and mm-hmm. I regret the fact that he didn't come, but predictability was something he stressed. Mm-hmm. And he teaches, as you do, mm-hmm. as Nat Nichols does. What did you want to say?
Well, Samantha? I just really want to reinforce what Nat's saying, because ultimately we're failing each other when we say our road system isn't set up for equality. The fact that the most vulnerable users, people walking and biking, the children who their only freedom and mobility is their 2 feet or a bicycle or the dependency of their parents, but that's not freedom, right? Is to be able to get around in that active way. And it's just, I think we're finding a huge gap in equality when we think about our transportation system. And so how do we shift that culture and shift that thinking? Locally, the city of Nashville, the mayor just declared a declaration of transportation independence, noting that freedom is not your car, and rather freedom is the choice to move around your community in any mode that you want. And to be able to have that opportunity for choice means you feel safe, you feel comfortable, you think it's more convenient or just as convenient to use the bike or walk, so on and so forth. And I think especially in an aging community, you know, what I've seen too in the papers and things like that is our elders of our community, I believe, don't want to give up their keys, not because they love driving. I mean, of course, some people naturally just love driving, but the core reason is they don't want to give up their independence and their freedom to access their daily doings, going to church, seeing their friends, getting their groceries by themselves. And so it's really a big cultural shift that we're talking about in that relationship.
I'm going to get to Mark Michaud in just a second, but Nat, when I asked you to come today, my sense is that you came with some things you wanted to talk about, some ideas you wanted to share, and I'd like you to do that at this point, if that's really the case. I could ask questions, but I think you have things on your mind.
Frankly, Samantha's done a really good job of addressing them. I came to do this semi-reluctantly because I feel like there's such a strong victim-blaming culture with what happens with cyclists and accidents. And when you invited me, I had a very large fear that I would be having to defend cycling, even though I know that you're a cyclist. I had a very large fear that I was going to have to be the spokesperson on what people can do to be safer cycling, which when you focus a conversation that direction, then you end up in this weird victim-blaming pocket. And I had a lot of reservations and fears about coming and talking about this, because there are very strong things that you can do to be a safer cyclist. But I didn't want to have this end up being, well, a very surface-level conversation about, you know, riding in the most dominant place on the road and wearing high-vis and wearing a helmet, things that I feel like are only marginally helpful.
What do you think is helpful, then? Say what you want to say, not what you don't want to say.
What do I think is helpful? I think infrastructure is helpful. That is, you know, I'm so glad that Samantha's here to talk about infrastructure, because I think that is a very big deal. I think that visibility is helpful, not as in people wearing bright clothing and having lights, but the fact that we aren't addressing we don't have a lot of signage, we don't have a lot of reasons that drivers should be reminded that there are cyclists on the road. I think that that's an incredibly important thing. I had been reminded right before I came out about this really wonderful London Cycling Campaign video they put out about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's two teams playing basketball, and one of them's in white shirts and one of them's in black shirts. And the beginning of the video, they say, okay, count how many times the white team passes the basketball. And they do, and they pass the basketball. They're like, okay, cool. They passed it 12 times. Fantastic. And then they say, okay, great. Did you see the moonwalking bear? And they go ahead and they rewind the video, and they show the video again. And sure enough, in the middle of this basketball game, there is a man in a bear suit that moonwalks directly through the middle of it. And you never see it because you're so busy counting the basketball passes of the white shirts. And this is important. This is important to know. If you don't look for something, you're never going to see it. How do we make it so that people in this community understand they have to look for us?
How do we do that? Ideas from you.
Well, we could start by maybe not having the leader posting victim-blaming articles. That'd be really nice. But it'd be also really good to think about having signage and having more visible bike lanes and having ASLs. I'd love to have ASLs. That'd be wonderful. Advanced stop lines.
I don't know what that is.
It's like a box at a light where cyclists filter through traffic to be in the box to begin with, so that everybody sees them and they know that they're there.
I have not seen those, but that does sound like a good idea. I have a question for anybody who wants to answer this one. I cross Sims Way on Kearney Street from Washington Street, and there is a cycle with an arrow painted, well, not so well painted any longer, just before the stoplight. And I've been told if I park my bicycle right there, it will make the light turn, even if no car comes by. Is that true? Is that what those are for?
Yeah, it's a... a mechanism, just like the signalized intersections have a tracking thing if a vehicle wheels go over it to help trigger the light, because
it does work, huh?
Yeah, but I have tested it out and I think it's not working for the bicyclists, so I actually was able to share that with the city engineers a few weeks ago, so I'm hoping they'll look at that. But that's a good example to point out where that bike box would be really useful, because at that intersection of Kearney and Sims, if you're the bicyclist and you want to take a left-hand turn to go downtown, it's hard for you to get that advanced visibility and leg up because you are, you know, a few miles per hour slower than your motoring friends. So a bike box would allow a person on a bike to jump ahead in that queue, be seen, make the left-hand turn, get into their bike lane, continue on, and the system works beautifully.
How often do you speak to the city council, Samantha?
Not often enough,
maybe. I can see that. How often do you speak to the city council, Nat?
Do you mean in an official capacity or when I have drinks with Amy?
Amy, your friend who's on the city council. I mean in official capacity.
Never, but I am on the Arts Commission, so I feel like I get enough time in meetings.
Okay, well, maybe they could hear from you as well. It's interesting ideas for infrastructure. My son lives in Boulder, Colorado. Mm. So I have done, we visited, I think, around 3 times, and he knows that when we come, he needs to find us a bicycle, and we go bicycling about. And yes, it is kind of bicycle heaven in a place like that.
My hope and kind of a response to that is that we can get to a place that we have normalized cycling, and again, that's infrastructure, many other things that we've talked about already, but we know of places in the world that are doing that. I personally consider myself an everyday bicyclist, where I'm biking because it's my main mode of transportation. I don't want to have to put on fancy garb to be able to bike. I want to bike in heels. Like, I want to look good when I'm biking, and I think everyone, regardless of your sex, should look good. You should be able to walk into your work place of office, and you should be then able to roll over and meet your friends after work. And there's a generational shift of commonality in that, but then also people of my age, the millennials, I guess I'm kind of in that bracket, are moving to Port Townsend because they want to walk and bike and be car light. And so the more that we can start to open our eyes and put the investments behind it, we will get more people biking. And when we get more people biking, the roads actually become safer. And at the end of the day, no one gets into their car, no one gets onto their bike, no one laces up their shoes to go out onto our streets with the intention of having their day dramatically ruined or ended. And so, you know, how do we normalize it, and how do we make sure that everyone feels like you're welcome? I had someone tell me when I was unlocking my bike in the downpouring rain, oh, bad day to bike. You know, it's like, no, I have to bike today. Like,
well, you know. Samantha, when is the beginning of bicycle season?
Well,
that's a joke. That's a straight line. See what you can do with it.
I wanted to say that May is Bicycle Awareness Month. So we're coming into a time of thinking about, you know, take May on as a challenge and get on your bicycle, take it to the recycler, get it fixed up, and try to bike to work, try to bike to shopping.
This week's KPTZ Compass, featuring interviews with Samantha Thomas, Mark Michaud, and Nat Nichols, is an edited version of a show produced by Phil Andrus that originally aired on his Toss Salad program on Friday, April 13th. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Alex Henley, Phil Andrus, and executive producer Steve Evans. The Compass airs at Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. and repeats the following Saturday at noon. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. KPTZ is embarking on an ambitious plan to expand our news operations in order to bring you daily news updates and more in-depth feature stories like those you hear on KPTZ Compass, and we are looking for help to make it happen. If you might be interested in joining the KPTZ news team, drop us a line at news@kptz.org. Or stop by the station at Mountain View Commons and fill out a volunteer application form. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Alex Henley.